You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. If a third grader scores poorly on those standardized math and reading tests, there may be a lot more to the problem than just the school, according to an eye-opening new study. The research was conducted by two University of Michigan professors, Joseph Ryan, who's an associate professor of social work and co-director of the Child and Adolescent Data Lab, and his colleague Brian Jacob, who's co-director of the Youth Policy Lab as well as a professor of education policy. Joseph Ryan is with us now. You and your colleague Brian Jacob looked at state data on child maltreatment records and then cross-checked that with educational data on all public school children in Michigan. What did you find?
I should say that this is a partnership between the university and the state of Michigan and our colleagues at the Department of Health and Human Services and the Michigan Department of Education.
So you had a lot of players involved in looking
at this. That's right. And it really takes this level of collaboration because these agencies historically do not share information. Education uses education data to solve education problems. Department of Health and Human Services use Health and Human Services data to solve problems related to child abuse neglect and juvenile justice and things like that.
So you were able to break down some of those silos and kind of cross-check and cross-reference.
That's right. And to the layperson, it makes a lot of sense because if you're interested in academic outcomes, it's important to know what's going on in school, but it's certainly important to know whether the child is involved in the foster care system, whether the parents are incarcerated, all these other major life events that are going on that we think will have an important role in academic trajectories through elementary school.
So when you did this data cross-check, what did you find?
We found that about 20%, 18% exactly, of third graders had been the focus of a child abuse neglect investigation. This is prior to their entering third grade, so by 8 years old. We're interested in their subsequent academic outcomes, but the rate at which children are involved with the child abuse and neglect system, I think, will be surprising to a lot of people. If you look around the average third grade classroom in the state of Michigan, 1 in 5 children have been the focus of a formal investigation for abuse and neglect.
And you found some schools had even higher rates.
Wide variation. So some down into the single digits and some individual schools up around 60%. So it would be considered the norm.
That's kind of jaw-dropping.
Well, when we ask people who work in social work or some of these settings, they always say hi, but we don't really know exactly what they mean. But I was surprised that it was nearly 20%.
And what kinds of traumas did you find that these youngsters were experiencing?
So the most common or frequent type of maltreatment that children experience is neglect. Inadequate supervision, inadequate sort of housing. That's about 75-80% of all abuse and neglect reports. Substance abuse is clearly a big factor in families getting involved with the child welfare and the child protection system. About 25% physical abuse, and then somewhere 3-4% sexual abuse.
What do we know about what that kind of trauma, that kind of picture of trauma, what can that produce in terms of one's life, of a child's life circumstances and performance?
Well, it creates a lot of challenges for a young child. If you think of their ability to establish relationships with adults, just issues of trust and relationships early on, bonding, which we know has long-lasting impacts on child development, and then a whole host of other outcomes, including subsequent involvement with the juvenile justice system as an adolescent, employment difficulties, certainly some evidence on the foster care and participation in the foster care and their ability to graduate high school.
What pointed you and Professor Jacob to this idea of doing this kind of cross-check of data?
We have long been interested in linking state administrative data to really get a better understanding how children, adolescents, families are moving through these systems. We think about these systems serving individual, unique families, but really there's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of overlap between adolescents in the foster care system and adolescents in the juvenile justice system. Obviously, all the children in the public schools, about a little more than 90% of children in Michigan enroll in public schools, so we know they're spending a great deal of time there. And so we talked about linking these data to first understand the problems and then to use these data to help solve some of these problems.
Why did you focus on third graders?
Third graders is the first year for the standardized tests here in Michigan. So it made sense to look at their earliest standardized academic outcomes.
So how did you see these scores reflective of the kinds of traumas these youngsters have gone through?
Third graders not involved with the child abuse and neglect system, 65% reached proficiency in reading, and 57% of those involved in the child welfare system, child protection, reached proficiency. And it was 51% versus 44% for math. So already pretty far behind.
And here we are knowing that the state is preparing to hold back third graders who don't hit the mark with their reading scores.
That's right. You can see where that policy makes sense, you know, just in a general conversation, right? We don't want to pass students on. But the question is, who will then get held back? And the second question is being held back the right intervention? Is that what kids need at third grade, another year of third grade? Or could we have done something differently in kindergarten or first, second grades that would have helped them reach proficiency?
Did you see, for example, urban, suburban, and rural areas where there are differences?
Sure. There's big differences by race, by poverty, by geography, so urban and rural schools. Children who are involved with child protection more likely to be African American, more likely to come from poor families, more likely to come from urban environments. The impact, we didn't look at the impact per se of maltreatment and whether that varies, but there were certainly clear differences in one's likelihood of having contact with the child abuse neglect system.
When you say that 18% of third graders subject to at least one formal investigation for maltreatment, so one in five kids sitting in that third grade classroom, that is a pretty significant number. So what do you see as the main takeaways here?
How can schools prepare themselves to deal with a highly traumatized student population? So in schools where it's 20, 30, 40, 50%, there ought to be some programs, support services in place so that by the time a child reaches third grade, they're not already behind academically. Those gains, I would suspect, will be difficult to make up over time. It's thinking about what can schools do to support these students so that they can progress through school at an equal rate to their peers.
How do you think we should be rethinking things based on what you found, particularly in terms of intervention and in policy?
Well, that part's not as clear as one might like, and this is where our partnership with the state comes in. If you think about the partnership, the state really is the experts in what's going on in the field and also in terms of policymaking. There's clearly some confidentiality and legal issues with sharing data. We don't foresee any scenario where teachers are receiving reports at the beginning of the academic year that say, here's the 8 students in your classroom that have involvement with the child abuse and neglect system. There's probably real problems to that. Teachers might treat those students quite differently. And there's a whole host of legal issues with that as well. But it doesn't mean that schools can't prepare themselves on how to support children coming from home environments. I mean, we do this for poor students in terms of breakfast programs, free and reduced lunch. We do this for students with peanut allergies. And so it's thinking about what is it we're doing with, in particular, for abused and neglect children who are coming into the classroom so that they can have an equal opportunity to succeed.
And it strikes me that there needs to be more to the conversation among states around state educational policy than the school has failed or teachers have failed if test scores are not what they should be.
Oh, that's right. And we don't see that as any implication in our work. I mean, teachers are asked to do a lot more than I think most folks know.
But we hear that theme sometimes from Lansing. What are we going to do to fix the schools?
Sure.
But what you're saying is you have some children coming in who are just bearing a burden that may be invisible until you start doing some.
That's right. What we think about is we want students who show up to school and are ready to learn. So whether this is increased access to early intervention, most of these children experienced abuse and neglect prior to reaching kindergarten. So the question is maybe there's opportunities for early intervention that can get these kids up to speed by the time they hit kindergarten so that by the time they hit third grade, they're not as far behind.
Where do you think you'll go now with this information you have?
We're interested in partnering with some school districts to look at different interventions that might narrow this achievement gap. We're interested in whether or not these differences are exacerbated over time or diminish over time. We're interested in following some of these adolescents into other service systems like the juvenile justice system, the adult correctional system, So what we know by linking a lot of these data is children and families that show up in state agencies, they've been involved with the state for quite some time. So when we look at adolescents involved with the juvenile justice system, about 60% have had prior contact with the child protection system. And on average, they've been involved with them for 8 years. So it's not as if they show up at 14 or 15 with these complex problems. We're trying to figure out ways, are there opportunities for intervention earlier on so that we can prevent or at least limit the cascade of these secondary problems?
Do you get a chance ever to interact with these youngsters to get a sense of who that little person is sitting in that desk?
Prior to going to graduate school, I spent a number of years working in child welfare and juvenile justice agencies. And even today, almost all of our work is in collaboration with either state agencies, but also in teaching. We spend a lot of time in different service settings so that it's not just about data.
Well, the study is absolutely challenging and fascinating, and I've been talking with the co-author, Joseph Ryan, Associate Professor of Social Work and co-director of the Child and Adolescent Data Lab at the University of Michigan. Thank you so much for being with us and sharing your work with us.
My pleasure.